The cars parked in front of Chase's house indicated a social gathering where the guests couldn't have known each other. There was Bath's top-of-the-line BMW, black, shiny, and new, perched in the driveway like he owned the place. Behind it, Alaric Mack's Buick Riviera, complete with gold trim, gold wheels, gold grille, gold bumpers, and gold steering wheel. Not far behind, parked along the street, was a standard-issue white Chevy Lumina, whose owner was none other than Detective Dick Story. And the compact Ford Festiva behind it belonged to the struggling freelance topless dancer Wanda, Jennifer's bitter and money-hungry sister. Squiggy stood guard at the door as the guests inside huddled around a ridiculously expensive European antique coffee table. Bat was presiding over the group, looking dapper in his Armani suit that fit him like a glove. Of course, it would have to be a huge glove to be able to wear it as a suit. And since a person only has two arms and two legs, one of the finger holes would just hang there limply. So in a way, the suit fit better than a glove. Jennifer's sister Wanda was the first to speak. "Look, my sister was no saint," she admitted. "You might say she'd seen more men with her pants down than a Greyhound bus station toilet. But I loved her. And so did the Dallas Cowboys, the Texas Rangers, and almost every rock band that came through town. She don't deserve to be treated this way." Bat seized the moment. "You're right, Wanda. And that's why I promised to give each of you $1 million to put my brother away for what he did. He deserves to spend the rest of his life in jail, eating bad prison food and screaming, 'Sooey!' every night, like Ned Beatty in Deliverance." He spoke with the passion of a high school football coach whose team was about to win their first game in 20 years. "Together, we can make it happen." Bat then turned to Alaric Mack, Chase's lawyer, who obviously has a screwy sense of loyalty. "How'd your meeting go, Alaric?" Mack stood up, always willing to hold court. His shiny purple velvet pants reflected the sunlight coming in from the bay windows. He wore a white and orange silk shirt with puffy sleeves that looked like it was bought off the rack at an MC Hammer bankruptcy sale. And the huge gold chain around his neck led the eyes naturally down to the enormous red clock that hung just below his chest. "Thank you, my brother," he began, nodding at Bat. "I just spoke to Chicken Meat, and he ain't gonna go for it. He's pulling the whole 100% not guilty routine. I tried to get him to go for a plea bargain, but he didn't bite. I guess he saw the way some of them prison boys was looking at him. One of them stuck a sign on his back that said, 'Finger licking good.' I think old Chase Manhattan wants to be getting out of the big house." Bat was not about to let his brother's plea for justice keep him from achieving his goals. To have Chase put away for life, win Rebecca over, make a baby with her, inherit Dad's money, and then control the world with his special cellular phone chip. That reminded Bat. He had to make a to-do list so he didn't forget all this stuff. Detective Story was next to speak. "I think I can help out. What if I plant some drugs in Rebecca's hospital bed? Or I could ruin Chase's reputation by spreading the rumor he sells Excel long distance. Let me know. I can make it happen." Bat said, "I've got a plan of my own to make sure we all get paid very quickly. All we have to do is..." Just then, Bat was interrupted by Detective Story's portable cell phone. He answered it, "Story here?" And then listened intently. The news must have been bad because he scrunched up his face in disgust, like he'd just seen Liza Minnelli's performance during that Michael Jackson tribute. As he put the phone away, he turned to address the others. "I gotta get to the hospital," he said. "Rebecca just remembered something."